Welcome to Looking at Lucasfilm, the podcast with a different perspective on the world of Star Wars, Indiana Jones, and all of the other entities that George Lucas, Kathleen Kennedy, Dave Filoni, and the rest of the team at Lucasfilm, again, we're still deciding about Favreau, have dreamed up over the past 40 years. I'm entertainment writer Jim Hill, and my co-host, the one and only Dan Z, and I are recording this on Wednesday, October 14th. Correct me if I'm wrong, Dan, we are, what, 6 days away from your book being on sale?
6 days away from the release of the Star Wars book, written by myself, Pablo Hidalgo, and Cole Horton. Very, very exciting. I've got one in my hands now. It was pretty surreal. I mean, I don't have to tell you, you've obviously been doing this for a lot longer than me, but to actually hold your first book in your hands is pretty special, so I'm excited. And I thank you for all the positive vibes you've been sending out.
That's what I'm here for. But on the other hand, can we talk a minute about your official author photo?
Sure.
I mean, wow. They is there a hunkazizer setting? Because, you know, I've seen you, Dan, in person, and that looks like, you know, your 1960s soft rock album cover.
Sign the picture? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, no, I just, can you talk a little bit about when it was shot, where it was shot? Because again, it's a great photo, but, you know, and I mean this in the kindest possible ways, but, you know, again, we turned the good looks knob up a couple of ranks there. How did we do this?
I've aged well.
Well, aged okay. I sadly cannot say that. I'm this far away from, you know, hiding under bridges and frightening trolls.
That was actually taken outside of our house. We live on about 4.5 acres. Three and a half of those acres are woodland, but mm-hmm. It was taken at our house, and there's no tricks. That's just me. It was taken a few months ago.
Okay. And was this with our COVID beard or?
That was just, hey, I'm going to get a picture in a little bit. My wife thinks I look good with a 5 o'clock shadow. So that's what I went with.
Okay, well, good. That's it. Your wife is not incorrect. I mean, again, it's a great picture, but again, it's just sort of like, wow. I mean, just you know, Dan's going to start signing 8x10s. This looks great. all right. Well, and perhaps Disney with their reorg of their massive media empire will you know, find you a new home as you know, a cinema star. Speaking of which, now, did you? You know, see the announcement this week about the reorg?
Yeah, it's pretty powerful stuff. A lot of working gears and a lot of controversial stuff going on. So let's buckle in for this.
Well, all right. For those of you who didn't hear, basically the Walt Disney Company just this past week unveiled a major what they call streamlining of their media and entertainment businesses. And under this new structure, Disney's primary focus as a company is going to be developing and producing original content for the company's streaming services, as well as its legacy platforms. And are you familiar with the term legacy platform, Dan?
It's relatively new to me.
Yeah. Well, gee, but that's the thing. It's like in this case, legacy platform means movies that are shown in theaters and series that air on terrestrial television. So, to be completely blunt here, a lot of this decision was made on the success of Disney Plus, which, you know, just launched a year ago next month on November 12th, right? 2009?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. All right. Disney's original plan or hope for its subscription streaming service was they would have 100 million subscribers in 5 years' time. And Dan, as of August of this year, they already have 60.5 million.
Wow.
So yeah. You know, and you know, so that's really kind of stunning. It caught a lot of people at the studio you know, off guard. And speaking of the studio, this is going forward, you know, Disney now is a company that's in the content creation business. They're breaking it down into three different groups. There's gonna be the studios, which is going to be headed by the current studio heads, Alan Horn and Alan Bergman. There's going to be general entertainment. That's really more of the TV side of things. That's going to be headed by Peter Rice. He's a Fox vet that came over. And finally, sports. So we're talking ESPN there. That's going to be run by Jimmy Pietro, who's an ESPN vet. And as for the two Allens, they're now going to be, their new job titles are chairman of studio content. And they're going to be creating branded theatrical movies and then episodic content, the limited series like The Mandalorian. And in turn, all of the various divisions of the company on the studio side, we're talking Walt Disney Pictures, we're talking Walt Disney Animation Studios, Pixar Animation Studios, Marvel Studios, and of course Lucasfilm, 20th Century Studios, and finally Searchlight. And they're all now going to be tasked with creating branded theatrical films, as well as, again, this episodic content, these limited series for Disney Plus. And the interesting thing is when you talk with anybody at Disney, Dan, they all point to The Mandalorian as to why. I mean, that evidently this was in the works. They were talking about doing it 2 and 3 years down the line. But the combination of COVID and what it did to Disney's business model and the fact that The Mandalorian was basically became this once in a generation phenomenon. In fact, somebody was explaining to me that they actually have started pulling out old Davy Crockett numbers, Dan. And what's weird is The Mandalorian is starting to shape up to be a Davy Crockett type global phenomenon.
Wow.
Yeah. So yeah, that was the thing. That on the basis of how well Mandalorian did, this is what, you know, Disney's takeaway was that in this new realm, you know, that this new business model, you don't have to create a film that, you know, that gets a huge general audience. You now, it's possible, you know, that the Disney Plus is basically this piece of straight pipe to a specific fandom. And that, you know, all you have to do, you know, to be a success is to target a relatively small but extremely loyal audience that then begins to talk up your show and then brings the general audience in. And that's what they honestly believe happened with The Mandalorian. You know, it was, I mean, face it, there's a huge Star Wars audience. But the fact that the Star Wars audience then, after they saw the first couple of episodes of The Mandalorian, began to evangelize for the show and turn to friends and family and go, you have to watch this. That's what turned it into the success that it is today. By the way, on the heels of your recommendation of the Mandalorian cereal, yes. I was in Target the other day and finally they had it in stock. And I'm a diabetic. I should not buy, you know, breakfast cereal. But I have to ask, on your box of the Mandalorian cereal, was there a painting on the other side?
Yes, of the child.
Well, yeah. Now, did it have a number on the bottom? Like, you know, because that's the thing. You know, I picked the thing up, and it's like, I'm not going to get this. And I turned it over, and here's this amazing painting. Mm-hmm. Of the child and Mando. And then this little, what is the name of the thing they wrote on? The lizard creature with the blunt head.
Oh, yes, yes. I knew it until you said that. I'll think okay. of it. I'll think of it.
Okay, but they literally
blurg.
Have one of those.
It's
on
a
the
blurg.
Back.
I knew I'd think of it.
Blurg. They have a blurg, a red blurg on the back with the number 22 on it. And it was one of these things where I'm looking at this and it's like, okay, is this the 22nd painting or, you know, did I get the lucky 22nd box?
I'll have to check mine to see what the number is. And it's Blurg, Blurg.
There we go. There we go. But yeah, I mean, I loved the painting so much. I had the ring at home. You know, and speaking of which, have you seen the from Titan, the Mandalorian, the art and the imagery book, volume one that just came out?
I have not seen. I know that it's available, but I have not seen it yet.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's really, I mean, I hate to say it. I bought it thinking it was the really for real Mandalorian art of, you know, coffee table book. And it turns out that's not coming out till December. This thing put together by Titan, it's $19.99. It has a lot of great art, particularly the, you know, those wonderful paintings you'd see at the ends of the episodes. It's got great stuff, but I it's really heavy on artwork and very light on text. So,
so it's more like just sort of like just a bunch of graphics or illustrations, yeah, but not actually, yeah, like behind the scenes, like the ones that Phil Sostak does and the people from ILM. No,
that's it exactly. You know, but I have to say there is a volume two coming out in December that's supposed to have the artwork for season two of The Mandalorian.
Hmm.
And this was good enough that it, you know, I cracked. I've already pre-ordered that, and then I made sure to, you know, to order my actual copy of the Art of the Mandalorian, which, as you mentioned, Phil's doing. To get back to how
the reorg
is gonna, and the interesting thing is, if we'd been paying attention, Kathleen Kennedy was actually talking about this as far back as August. She did an interview where she was, you know, she was talking about how she was looking forward to, you know, Disney Plus being the new home for Star Wars. You know, she talked up the beauty of these limited series rather than a theatrical release film, because it then gave the creative team the ability to do very character-driven stuff, you know, to do extended storytelling and connected storytelling. And that this space offers us a great opportunity to do that. They aren't kidding. I mean, I know we talked on the last show about how the Obi-Wan series is going to begin production in March of next year over in the UK. But did you see the news this week about the Cassian Andor series?
I did not.
What's interesting is that you can find these things out in weird places, like the trades, where it's not necessarily where fandom traditionally looks for this info, but they were announcing for the folks who were the grips, the union players who are looking for work, that starting on November 4th, they're going to start shooting. And I guess the tentative title for the show is Star Wars Andor. Evidently that title may change.
I hope so. That's pretty vague. Yeah. It's not like he's a household name. Like, you could get away with Star Wars Skywalker or Star Wars Solo, mm-hmm, but Star Wars Andor, yeah, I feel like that's a little too in the weeds.
Okay. Good. Remember, this is Danzy who said this. The professional, you know, model. Okay. Let's see. Other thing, what's interesting about these announcements in the trade is that the folks that they were, you know, the job announcements they were making weren't necessarily to actually work on the limited series, Dan, but they were to work on the series that's chronicling the series.
How meta.
Well, you know, but face it, you know, given how popular Disney Gallery The Mandalorian turned out to be, that seems to be the plan going forward now, that each of these series will have, I don't know as we'll be getting another 8-episode version like we did with The Mandalorian, but the idea is that each of these shows will have a shadow crew that will document the production of the show, and then they'll use that material to, you know, create a docuseries that will help, you know, support the show and, keep the fan base entertained and involved.
And that's something that George has been doing from the beginning, where he just he documents everything, takes a lot of photographs. He writes in journals. He hires people to kind of follow the process along. Originally, it wasn't for Blu-ray and DVD, but of course, that was the case since Disney purchased the company. And of course, the great success that they've had behind the scenes of The Mandalorian. So I think there's a lot of things to look forward to in that, and certainly not unprecedented.
Well, but that said, what's kind of interesting is, face it, you know, we know we've got, you know, we're just 2 weeks out now from, you know, getting to see season two of The Mandalorian. We've got Star Wars Andor, you know, shooting in November. We've got Star Wars Obi-Wan, the limited series shooting in March. Where this gets interesting is how this impacts the Star Wars theatrical releases, which, remember, you know, that film was still, it was originally supposed to go out in December 16th, 2022. And, you know, look, you've been paying attention. You know, you've seen what COVID said. I mean, just what was it? Just last week we saw Jurassic World Dominion, the next installment of that film franchise, pushed from 2021 to 2022. Given that Avatar 2, which again was supposed to come out in December 2021, has now been pushed to December 2022. That means the next Star Wars theatrical film has been pushed all the way out to December of 2023.
That's right.
So we are 38 months away from that.
And in my opinion, that is also what helped to sort of force into light speed this notion of, hey, we're not going to focus on theatrical stuff. And like you had mentioned earlier, yes, COVID is probably, you know, 75% of this, but also the success of The Mandalorian. And The Mandalorian, and someone pointed this out to me recently, is the only Star Wars thing that's come out since Rogue One that hasn't been polarizing. Everyone seems to legitimately enjoy it. So you may as well focus on that avenue, and let's hope we can continue to get lightning in a bottle.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, let's face it, a lot depends on how people perceive season two. You know, like pressure, lots of pressure. And speaking of fairly pressurized situations, Indiana Jones 5, and I called friends at Disney to confirm this, still supposed to be out in theaters July of 2022.
Wow, I sure hope so, because he's going to be, what, 80 at that point?
He turns 80 2 weeks before that release date. But at the same time, it's one of these situations where James Mangold evidently still doesn't have a script he likes. He's also concerned. I'm, you know, the interesting thing, a lot of the folks are following what's going on with Jurassic World Dominion and the fact that they had to shut down production again for 2 weeks because they had a COVID case on the set. And, you know, and I'm told, you know, it's Harrison's age being 80 is a real concern, you know, given the COVID situation. You know, it's the whole notion of, you know, he's a beloved actor and he's the key to this franchise. And, you know, the Indiana Jones films are renowned for, you know, we go to India, we go to, we go to exotic ports of call. And, you know, yes, you can do some of the stuff in green screen, but you also, for them to be legitimate adventure films, you have to travel the world. And I again, that's just what's kind of interesting when you talk with folks at Disney. It's like, yes, we have that release date, and yes, it hasn't shifted, but there is a lot of talk about, you know, are we going to get beaten up because we take our 80-year-old star around the world and put him at risk?
Well, when did Crystal Skull come out? Was that 2008? Oof. Is it 2008?
2007. Yeah. I mean
that shame on them. I mean, it should not take creative, intelligent people, you know, this long to come up with a script. I mean, how many scripts have they redone? And I feel like, I don't know, it's a little frustrating because this is something we want. you know, this is obviously his swan song. He's been wanting to do it forever and ever. And I just think it's really unfortunate and almost embarrassing that they haven't made it a priority.
Well, now, just to be clear here, you know, again, in fact, little cross promotion here. I want to say Drew on his Light the Fuse podcast is interviewing David Cope, you know, the yeah. gentleman who, you know, wrote the screenplay for a couple of the Mission Impossible films, but also, you know, was working on Indy 5. And he talked about how it was a very amicable break, you know, in regard to him walking away from the project. But it just, at the same time, it was trying to come up with a story that pleased Steven, that worked for Harrison, that, you know, George had some input on. And this was a hard Venn diagram to get work, you know, coupled with the fact that, you know, the feeling was that this was going to be the last time that Harrison was going to play this character. And so you wanted to send him out, you know, as big as possible. They could never come up with a script that serviced everyone. And, you know, the fact that in the end, Spielberg, you know, stepped away, you know, and it's been insinuated that Steven just felt like at that point he wasn't helping, he was hindering, you know, and it's just like, maybe I need to step away here.
And it was 2008, by the way.
There we go. Okay. So, but anyway, to get back to the Star Wars theatrical release, I think, Dan, you're right. The belief at Disney right now is that this just all plays into our favor. You know, that you know, it's a situation where, you know, we'll have all this stuff on, Disney Plus, the limited series, keeping people engaged and, you know, enjoying Star Wars. And in regard to a theatrical film, Absinthe makes the heart grow fonder. Plus, it gives them time to find the very best idea, the strongest self-contained story. And there's a number of teams right now that are working at Lucasfilm, you know, on that exact project, and are the different sets of directors and writers. You know, long story short, the next Star Wars theatrical film has to be another Force Awakens, a real event. You know, you have to want to go back to theaters to see this thing on a big screen. And, you know, let's face it, you know, especially given people's concerns about right now about safety going to movie theaters, it's got to be a hell of a movie to get you back there. So, speaking of the, we were just talking Force Awakens, which brings us to the last Star Wars trilogy. Did you see the story that's come out of Pablo's new book, the Star Wars Fascinating Facts about Episode 8?
No.
Well, you know, face it, everyone kind of beats up on that installment of the series, you know, a lot of the ideas that Ryan put out there. And a little spoiler here, folks, if you haven't seen it already, but Luke dies in that movie. And you know, a lot of the Star Wars fandom beat up Ryan for doing that. But it turns out that Pablo, in fact, this is on page 140 of that book, with the headline, Luke Skywalker's Destiny. And the fascinating fact that Hidalgo shares on this page of the book is, years before The Last Jedi began development, the treatment left behind by George Lucas in 2012 also had Episode 8. That was going to be the one where Luke Skywalker would die. So, you know.
Makes sense. That's the Joseph Campbell pattern of the mentor. You know, that's how it works. That's how stories work.
Oh, no. I mean, again, you're right about the classic structure, but what's kind of interesting is that Timothy Zahn, who's written the Thrawn books, one of the only people to get to see that outline that George prepped in 2012. And he talked about, you know, the original idea, and he said, you know, you have to understand George changes his mind, you know, so it may not be what he's thinking of right now. But the idea was that the trilogies, the nine films in total were going to be about three generations. So you'd have the original trilogy, and then with the prequels, you go back to Luke's father, and you find out what happened to him. And then for films 7, 8, and 9, it was supposed to be about Luke's children, and or the equivalent. And so he talked about how, I guess, the original outline that Lucas brought to Disney was built around a teenage female young Jedi Padawan character called Kira. And I guess she was described in the outline as a loner, hothead, gear-headed badass. And the interesting thing is, supposedly, this was the stepping off point, eventually refined and rewritten for Rey. But let's see, Kira was supposed to have a friend, a teenager called Sam, who carried a blaster. And this was supposedly the stepping off point for Finn. But had you heard anything about that? About the,
this is all brand new to me. I had not heard any of this.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Because it, I mean, face it, George, George did have a fondness for, teenage characters. We were just talking about Crystal Skull and Mutt, how Mutt is portrayed in that. And as long as we're talking about Indiana Jones, tell you what, folks, when Dan and I get back from this break, we're going to talk about the young Indiana Jones and the Adventure Stunt Show, the worst name for, a proposed attraction in the history of Disney.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Okay, we're back. And I apologize, folks. It's October, and I wanted, Dan and I are recording this in the middle of the month, but people are kind of thinking about Halloween now, and I wanted to do something Halloween-y. And I spent a good amount of time this past week working on maybe doing something about the Rancor.
Rancor?
The Rancor.
Yes.
Okay. I don't know how much you know about, when they were working on Jedi, the first pass on the Rancor, it was a guy in a suit.
That's right.
Yeah. And they, and evidently the idea was that, that this creature that was supposed to be 14 feet tall and weigh over 3,500 pounds, they could never get it to work the way they wanted as a suit. It still looked like a guy in a suit. So they paused production, and they eventually reimagined it as sort of a rod operated pirate, puppet, not pirate. Well, there you go. But the thing is, they filmed it quickly at a high frame rate, and then slowed it down. And the weird thing is, by doing that, that gave the impression that it was far larger, far heavier. So that's, how they got the character. But again, it was one of these things. I was doing a deep dive on it, and it didn't get what I was looking for, for a Halloween type show. And then it occurred to me, it's like, geez, just go with the hearse outside of the Haunted Mansion at Disneyland, which, by the way, is still closed, folks. Governor Newsom is supposedly sending some representatives from the state of California to Florida to go to Disney World.
Like their own bird's eye view to just sort of see, to actually see with their own eyes that it's actually working.
Yeah. So, you know, and Disneyland in the last week or so has also issued some additional safety and health protocols. So, you know, they're still hoping they can get it open by November. But I don't know if you saw, Dan, that to sort of placate the Star Wars fans who can't get into Galaxy's Edge and haven't been able to get in for months, they actually took the Wonderground gallery space there and turned it into a Blackspire outpost, you know, trading outpost. You know, a lot of the stuff from the bazaar is now available, you know, out there at Downtown Disney Anaheim.
And Shop Disney on occasion will have stuff from Galaxy's Edge, including some of the legacy lightsabers and Anakin and Obi-Wan's Jedi robes. And there's some really nice stuff there.
Yeah, I have to admit, I'm kind of intrigued by the fact that you can supposedly get kyber crystals at this store. So you could, you know, and likewise holocrons.
I'm kind of mixed on that because I like the notion that you can only get it on Batuu, and I understand it's about revenue is obviously an important part of telling the story. But I don't know. Mm-hmm. Does it take away from the novelty? I mean, if you're holding a kyber crystal at your home, you're still going to love it. But it's sort of a mixed blessing, I guess.
It is. So, you know, but again, the hard reality is that again, you know, that this whole, you know, park, and by that, you know, a Batuu as well, has been closed since the middle of March. And, you know, the whole notion of, you know, we want to service that fandom and we want to give them a way to, if they want things from that space, you know, a Lothgat or the like, you know, they can come here. But anyway, to get back to the hearse out in front of the Haunted Mansion, that was actually purchased. That, you know, it was supposed to be a prop. And again, the Young Indiana Jones and the Adventure Spectacular Stunt Show. By the way, Dan, Disney does this all the time, that when they're developing a ride, they will start to buy props before, you know, that they've actually, in some cases, before they've got the official green light. Because sometimes what they'll do is that, for example, they'll prop a conference room when they're bringing in the board to sign off on a project. And so, you know, for example, you'll walk in and it's like, oh, room themed like the Haunted Mansion. Yes, we're looking to improve the Haunted Mansion. And these are, you know, some of the effects we'll be doing or trying to do. And we're hoping you can get behind that. So, in fact, I still remember, you know, there was the Disney World cast member who sent me all of the photos for the props they bought for the presentation for Disney's Night Kingdom. Do you ever hear about that?
No.
It was going to be a mini park. You know, in a weird sort of way, it was Disney's answer to Discovery Cove at SeaWorld. But the idea was that it was a park that would only open after dark, 1,500 people, and you could do things like zip line over, you know, through bat-filled caves, or you could go out with night vision goggles and watch, you know, in fact, it was going to have this animal collection component. And the weird part of it is during the day, they were going to use this facility for, you know, conventions, that, you know, corporate groups that would come to town. This would be where, you know, you would go to do your trust building exercises with your team. You know, it's just sort of like, we're all going to go climb the rock wall and hope the alligator doesn't eat us. But yeah, that they bought the props. And in the end, it was actually the financial collapse in 2008 that killed the project. But yeah, it was supposed to be sort of a fifth alternative, you know, for people who are going who've been to Walt Disney World multiple times and were looking for special things to do. And, you know, nowadays, you know, Disney doesn't do that, you know, that they won't build something that doesn't have an IP around it, which is, again, how we got, you know, the Galactic Star Cruiser.
That's right.
You know, so
anyway, what's the latest on that, by the way?
They are, you know, I was poking, you know, in fact, again, putting on my Disney dish hat because Len and I'll be recording tomorrow. Trying to get some more information about opening dates, you know, and more to the point, I think you and I have talked in the past about the fact that this isn't a hotel you just throw open. You have to do, you know, they I want to say they plan no less than two entire different sets of playtests with Disney cast members who were going to sign, you know, non-disclosure agreements out the wazoo. But you know, the idea was that they would do the quote unquote 2-day cruise on the Halcyon, and you know, then Disney would do debriefs on all these folks, and then some 3 weeks later they put the next group in, and same thing, you know, that they do a 2-day long cruise, and then, you know, they debrief everybody, and it would only then, once they've you know, been able to do this, you know, with everybody, you know, non-disclosured up, so nobody can talk about what the experience is like, and they can then figure out, okay, that worked, that didn't, let's adjust that, and then like 2 months after that, the very first, you know, group would be able to go in. But construction is continuing. It's there's a certain level of frustration, because it's just sort of like, you know, when are we, you know, this was supposed to be part of the 50th anniversary of Walt Disney World, and now, you know, everything that was supposed to be part of the 50th anniversary of Walt Disney World has gone sideways. You know, the timetable for everything. And so the whole notion is, well, do we wait to, you know, do we push the opening of this to 2022? Because that seems to be where everybody seems to think the safe harbor is now. Because face it, you have to have people who feel confident to be able to get on a plane,
right,
to travel down to Orlando. And also, you know, that one of the things Disney's most concerned about with this is that the Halcyon is kind of a ship in a bottle. I mean, you know, you can't, once you come through the front door of the hotel and you take the shuttle back up to, you know that they have that sort of simulator experience that supposedly takes you from the planet, you know, the surface of Earth up until, you know, to where the Halcyon is getting ready to make its way to Batuu. You know, the idea is you can't leave the ship unless, the only way you can leave the ship is you go over to Blackspire Outpost. And then if you want to, you know, further journey out, you know, step away from your itinerary, you know, you have to do it by way of heading out through Disney's Hollywood Studios. And, you know, I guess there have been some discussions lately about the fact that we are asking people to stay inside of one hotel in the middle of a pandemic. And
not a great idea.
Yeah. You know, what, you know, the, you know, and the whole notion is that, you know, I don't know if you've managed to see the blueprints yet, but even the blueprints that are out there for the Halcyon show, for example, the outdoor access, they put in the equivalent of buffer rooms, so there will be no light bleed. You know, the face it, you're supposed to be, you know, orbiting a planet, looking down, and, you know, the notion of, wow, I'm on a spaceship, and then somebody opens an outside door, and here comes, you know, the light in from, you know, Central Florida. It's like, no, they can't do that. So that there are these doors within doors systems set up so that there will be no light bleed. But yeah, it gets a little difficult with a pandemic, you know, convincing people that, no, you need to stay here. You need to stay in the bar space. You need, you know, which we've created to be intimate because, you know, you want an intimate Star Wars experience. You know,
I'm really looking forward to it, and I can't wait to actually get to experience that and how surreal it's going to be. Hopefully I can take my family, but yeah, you got to do it. I want everything to work well. And you know, if you're going to spend, I mean, let's face it, it's a very expensive experience.
It is.
When you do it, you want to be able to experience it the way that they have intended. And that may be in like 2022 or later, like you said.
Yeah. And, you know,
it gives you more time to save your money.
Yeah. Okay. Good. See, this is why I like working with Dan. You can always find the positive. I'm, you know, I'm the flinty New Englander. I tend to see the glasses half empty, and hey, there's a crack in it, and what's that dirt at the bottom? So anyway, okay. Getting back to the young Indiana Jones and the Adventure Spectacular. Two inspirations for it. Obviously, one was the overwhelming success of the Indiana Jones Epic Stunt Spectacular, which had opened at Disney MGM back in August of '89. Plus, that same summer was when Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade came out, and that in fact May of that year. Anyway, the guys at Disney, they see The Last Crusade, especially the scenes at the beginning with young Indiana Jones, played by River Phoenix. And they see him scrambling across the roof of that moving circus train as he's trying to escape from those Tomb Raiders. And they suddenly realize they now have a way to bring a huge show like the MGM's Epic Stunt Spectacular to Disneyland. And more to the point, they have a piece of property that would be ideal for this. For more than a decade, WDI had been looking for something to place in this huge piece of property that they had at Disneyland out behind Big Thunder Mountain Railroad. In fact, this is where, I don't know if you know the Disney project Discovery Bay, where they were sort of a tribute to Jules Verne. But, you know, in each case, when Disney proposed something to build there, the execs just couldn't. You know, it's the last piece of open real estate at Disneyland. And more to the point, every time somebody came to them with an idea, it was going to be this huge expense. And it's like, you know, I can't roll the dice unless I know, you know, this is going to be a smash. But this, on the other hand, this is Indiana Jones. This is a character that's at that point had starred in three highly successful films. More to the point, they could literally show them the opening scene of Last Crusade with the train, you know, traveling through the American West in 1912. And it's just sort of like, you know, and here's Disneyland with a huge chunk of space between Frontierland and Fantasyland, which coincidentally a steam train, you know, ran through every day multiple times. And so it was almost too good to be true. It almost seemed preordained. So very quickly, the idea for the young Indiana Jones and the Adventure Stunt Spectacular came together. And irony, Dan, is right now, you know, were, you know, Disneyland's version of Galaxy's Edge open, people are walking today where the Indiana Jones Stunt Spectacular was supposed to be built. You know, pretty much where you enter at the top of Big Thunder Trail up by Fantasyland. This is, you are now basically on the stage at where the young Indiana Jones Stunt Spectacular was going to be built, where they were going to set up grandstands for 5,000 guests.
Wow.
And it was going to be, you know, you'd enter through this circus midway. And what kind of cool, you got inside the tent, you know, and it's a giant red circus tent or red and white striped circus tent. And what was kind of interesting about this is as you sat there waiting for the show to begin, you noticed, wait a minute, those are train tracks at the back of the tent. The train's going to come through the tent. And yeah, that this was actually one part of the show at one key moment in the show, they were going to recreate the scene from The Last Crusade where young Indy is scrambling across the circus train. And but the other thing what's interesting about this is, unlike what they did at MGM, where it was, you know, they were pretending to shoot scenes from Raiders, and made a big, very big deal about, okay, you know, here's our fake camera crew and let's practice this up before we do it. The young Indiana Jones show was going to be done in one continuous shot. It was going to be a 20-minute long play, featuring Indy. And the framework, Dan, was a little weird. It was actually supposed to start off with the older Indiana Jones, you know, stepping out into the empty circus ring and sort of reminiscing, you know, about, you know, go this adventure, I remember this. And then as he's talking, circus performers would come in and the show would then begin. And then the way it ended was equally strange, because you were going to be able to see a chunk of the berm of Disneyland. And the way the show was going to end is now, you know, young Indiana Jones is standing on stage in pretty much the same position where we saw the old Indiana Jones. And now Indy comes riding in on a black horse. He basically puts an arm, old Indy, he puts an arm out grabbing the young Indy, pulls him up onto the horse, and the two of them ride up over the berm. The horse rears back, and, you know, with the John Williams theme thundering, and they then disappear from sight. And I, again, hugely elaborate. Think of the Disney MGM show. That level effects, that elaborate set, that big a crew. But on the other hand, there were Imagineers who were working on a parallel Indiana Jones project. And their argument was like, look, you know, this was 5 minutes of, you know, the last movie. On the other hand, if we take a look at Temple of Doom, and, you know, that whole scene inside of the mine where people are riding in the mine cars, you know, that's a ride. That was, you know, that's, you know, and people come to Disneyland to go on rides. And in fact, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, but one of the reasons that they really wanted to do the mine car ride at Disneyland is that when Ben Burtt was putting together the soundscape for Temple of Doom, he actually came to Disneyland, and one night after the park closed, he walked around with his sound equipment and recorded. They let him inside of Space Mountain. They let him inside of Big Thunder, and he recorded the noise that roller coaster tracks make, you know, when cars are going by. And it actually incorporated a lot of that into the soundscape for Temple of Doom. But anyway, in the end, you know, when it came to sort of push came to shove, they decided at Disneyland, you know, it makes more sense to go with a ride than a stunt show. We've already done the stunt show in Florida. Let's double down on this this runaway mine train idea, which eventually mutated into the troop carriers, which got us the Indiana Jones Adventure, which opened at that park in March of 95. On the other hand, George at this point had been meeting regularly with Disney and had really enjoyed all of the work that had been done on this teenage version of Indiana Jones. In fact, that was the thing. They kind of aged him up a little bit from the River Phoenix character, because the notion was, okay, we're going to have to pay a professional stunt person and need to be at least 18 years old, you know, and, you know, so, you know, for employment purposes, he can't be, you know, a tenderfoot, you know, a 12 or 15 year old boy. But anyway, George had been working on this, you know, enjoying working with Disney on this teenage version of Indiana Jones, so much so that when the project got abandoned, George just turned and took all of the notes, and that's how we ended up with the Young Indiana Jones Chronicle, the TV series that ran on ABC from March of 1992 through July of 1993. But again, you know, I guess, and again, you think about the fact that, you know, if we pivot now back to the work that George did on his version of the last trilogy, and the notion that, you know, I want, I want our now older version of Luke Skywalker dealing with teenagers. You know, just, you know, again, it's just fascinating for me that George keeps circling back on all these sorts of ideas. So, Anyway, speaking of circling back, every show we talk about what you're up to with Coffee with Kenobi. I've noticed was following on Twitter that your Patreon group, you know, hey, you're poaching on my turf now when you're talking, or my and Drew's turf when you're talking about the five favorite Disney animated films.
Yeah, we on our Patreon show CWK Pullover, we selected our top 10 favorite Disney animated movies. Mm-hmm. We weren't including Pixar in that; it'll be a separate list. But yeah, our top fives and top tens are getting a lot of attention, and people really like them. So it's just kind of fun to flex my non-Star Wars side of things and look at it that way. And I did think about you guys when I was making it, actually. But that'd be fun for you guys to do something like that as well.
Yeah, I mean, how did it shake out? Was it mostly stuff from the first Golden Age or the second Golden Age?
It's kind of a smattering of both. We've only revealed 6 through 10 so far, but there's been a lot of stuff over the past 10 years that people have been bringing up, which I found really surprising. My number one film, I won't reveal it yet until everybody listens to it next week, but my number one film is a more recent one.
Okay. All right. I'm definitely going to have to listen to this. What about really Feral Coffee with Kenobi? What have we been doing there?
We looked at Star Wars Squadrons, the recent video game. We talked about Star Wars and how it lends itself to haunted houses, which is a really fun conversation this week. And then we're going to do a couple of weeks talking about the Star Wars books and behind the scenes of the creation of it, and hopefully talking with some other individuals who have written the book alongside me.
Ooh, okay. All right. Those sound like great shows. Can't wait to see that. All right. Here at the Gimbal Media Podcast Network, we're going to be doing a brand new Disney dish with Len tomorrow. In fact, I think we're going to be talking about the Wonders of Life Pavilion at Epcot. Let's see, Mr. Taylor and I will be doing a brand new fine tuning. We're getting down to where we can be talking about Glenn Keane's new movie, his solo project Over the Moon. Likewise, Josh Gad has a brand new project coming up from Disney called Once Upon a Snowman. We'll be talking about that as well. But at the same time, we've got Aaron Adams and I do the Marvelous Disney Show, and God, a lot of Marvel news breaking. Also, you know, they're going to be impacted by this reorg as much as the folks at Lucasfilm are. Universal Joint, Dustin Fuse and I will be recording a brand new show this weekend about the Universal Parks, and we finally got a brand new I Want That Out the Door with the Shelley Viotto lead. So that was fun, and we'll get a new one of those going in 2 weeks. Tell you what, Dan, I so enjoyed, first of all, that wonderful photo of you with your, early copy of the Star Wars book. Which again, on sale October 20th, folks. And likewise, again, seriously, so enjoyed the jacket photo, but it was just sort of like, wow, okay, and he cleans up nice. But if folks that want to also keep tabs on what you're up to on Twitter, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Zer, MRZEHR, and you can find Coffee with Kenobi all over social media.
Okay. Now Nancy wants me to remind you that you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Jim Hill Media and on Facebook at Jim Hill Media News. Okay, folks, one final thing before we go. If you could do Dan and I a favor, if you could head over to iTunes and not only rate and recommend Looking at Lucasfilm, but also Coffee with Kenobi, that would be incredibly helpful. And if you really, really, really like what you heard here tonight, head over to Bandcamp and subscribe. And I think that's going to do it for tonight, and which is a good thing because Mr. Z had places to go. So we'll let him go, and we'll be back here soon. So till then, folks, take care.